You're listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, where you get valuable information you just can't find anywhere else. To thrive in today's trying times, you need the Financial Survival Network, now more than ever. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and get your free newsletter and gift. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.
Welcome. You are listening to and watching the Financial Survival Network. Hey, you know that we get great people on here. You know that you get information that you're just not going to hear from the MSM or really in many other places, complicated, difficult times. Not even talking about really censorship, just people don't understand what's going on and there's no great effort to fill you in on what's going on. And that's why you need to stay in contact with us. We'd love to get emails from you. Let us know your opinion, where you think this whole thing is heading. Right now, we've got James Rickards. You know him well. And don't forget his Twitter feed is at James G. Rickards. And new book is out as of the 12th, The New Great Depression, Winners and Losers in a Post-Pandemic World. I think the title, Jim, brilliantly sums the whole thing up. I knew the second the pandemic was announced, orchestrated, whatever you want to call it, the virus is real. Perhaps the reaction of the world to it is unreal. But I knew at that moment it would be one of the greatest opportunities in history if you were properly prepared for it. And your book seems to agree with that.
Oh, thanks, Carrie. That's very nice. The title kind of says it all. This is the first and only book that covers both the pandemic and what I call the new Great Depression, a technical economic recession, but I view it as a new Great Depression. But it covers both. There are a certain number of books written by doctors and clinicians and scientists on the pandemic. A few of them are out there. There will be more books on the depression, although it's funny, economists don't actually like to write books. Some do, but most don't. They would rather write academic papers or journal articles and so forth. So there really aren't many books on the economy, but this is the first and only book that does both. It looks at the pandemic in a technical medical sense and then relates it to the economic depression that we're in, and then takes the story forward, tells you what's coming in 2021 and 2022, and kind of what you can do today to preserve wealth through a tough patch and actually prosper. Believe it or not, there are ways to do that. So, and when my publisher first called me last spring, in April to talk about this, they said, well, obviously the pandemic was the main headline. I mean, the economy was sinking rapidly. The market was down at the time, starting to come back, but pretty much near the bottom. And they said, Jim, we want you to write a book about this. It's obviously going to be huge interest in it. We love what you do on, the economy and capital markets and the banking system and all that, but don't really talk about the virology or the epidemiology because you're not a doctor. And I said, hold on. I said, that's like asking me to write about property damage in New Orleans in 2005 and not mention Hurricane Katrina. I mean, you can't do that. You have these two things are related. You have to do both. So they agreed with that. And, that was a good give and take, but that was the bottom line. And I teased my editor in chief. I said, I'm not a doctor, but I did go to Johns Hopkins. So I'm not intimidated by natural science. And I dove into that end of the pool and read well over 100 peer-reviewed scientific articles. So these were things, this wasn't like fringe theory or whatever. This was stuff that was in the Lancet or the New England Journal of Medicine or Journal of the American Medical Association, other top-tier publications. And it was coming out very fast at the time. And I kind of kept up with that. It's accessible if you have a little bit of scientific background, which I do, and you applied yourself to it, you could understand it. I'm not saying I'm working in an electron microscope, but I could follow that. So I was able to do that. So chapter one on the book, I have a copy of it right here. It's The New Great Depression, Winners and Losers in a Post-Pandemic World. Chapter one starts with the virus itself, with the outbreak, how China bungled it. And it clearly came from a laboratory, this whole wet market theory, animal, bats jumping to humans. I'm not saying that can't happen. It can happen and it has happened, but that's not what happened in this case. That's Chinese propaganda. It came from the laboratory, the Wuhan Institute of Virology, how it got out, how the Chinese bungled it, lied about it, may even be a crime against humanity when all is said and done. Chapter two talks about the lockdown. And I make the point that the virus didn't cause the depression. It was the policy response to the virus. The virus caused a pandemic, and the pandemic was bound to have consequences. But we as a society, politically and individually, had choices as to how we responded to it. It was our choices, our policy response, that led to the Great Depression. Chapter three talks about the Great Depression itself, kind of goes through, you know, what happened over the last year in markets, but it goes beyond that. It talks about the human impact, the effects of the lockdown, unemployment, job losses, businesses being destroyed, et cetera, and kind of takes the story forward a little bit. Chapter four looks at monetary policy and fiscal policy, deficit spending, basically, and explains why they won't work. They're being done. The Fed printed $3 trillion, and the Congress has spent $5 trillion added to the deficit. By the way, another $2 trillion are on the way. So you're going to be looking at $6 or $7 trillion of deficits in fiscal 2020 and fiscal 2021. So they are printing the money, they are spending the money, but it won't work. And I explain why. And then in chapter five, talk about the mental health aspects of the pandemic, which are not well understood. The impact is grossly underestimated. The effects of this will really be intergenerational. They'll play out over not 30 months, but 30 years. That was true in the Great Depression, and it's going to be true again. And then finally in chapter six, I get down to some practical advice, like, okay, now you get the pandemic, you get the lockdown, what a blunder it was, you understand the economics. Here's what you can do personally to not just preserve wealth, but actually prosper. There's some good opportunities. And then wrap up the book with a recommendation for solving the economic problems. I don't expect governments to do it. They should, but they won't. But individuals can. So that's kind of, as I say, we have the pandemic here and we have the economics here. The bridge between the two is the chapter on the lockdown, because that's how the pandemic turned into a depression.
Yeah, I always said that the cure was far worse than the disease. Not to downplay COVID. I got it myself recently. I was in the hospital for a week, got through it, and I'm doing great. But point is, I wasn't going to lock down my life, no matter what, because I just wasn't going to do it. I mean, it's just the idea of self-isolating, social distancing from the world, or what I probably had a 1% chance of dying from, you know, figuring my age and comorbidities and all that. It just made no sense to me that we would be effectively quarantining healthy people and kind of just letting the sick people languish. I've read every major study probably up until a couple of weeks ago, because then it kind of became irrelevant. But things like taking vitamin D3 showed that 80%, you had an 80% more likely chance of dying from COVID if you had a vitamin D deficiency. Why wasn't the government just giving it out on every street corner? Same with zinc. There's a lot of different supplements, a lot of things that could help people that they just don't even know about. And that's all part of this botched response to it. You know, it's no wonder that people ascribe greater conspiracies to what's going on here, because the thing of actually shutting down the global economy to save several tenths of a hundredth or several hundredths of a percent of the population, maybe, is insane. I mean, the whole response has not been based upon science, with the exception of maybe the vaccines and the therapeutics, which there's been tremendous political back and forth on, which has definitely cost people their lives.
Well, that's true. And I make the point, it would be one thing if the lockdown saved lives, and then you had to say, okay, there's a trade-off here. If we lock down, we're going to save some lives, but we're going to destroy the economy. And is that a good trade-off? But that's not even the case. The lockdown doesn't save lives. The lockdown kills more people than it saves. Suicide rates have tripled. Murder rates have doubled. Drug abuse is up. Alcohol abuse is up. Domestic abuse is up. Depression, anxiety, anger, all these things are greatly on the rise because of the lockdown. Okay. And then the lockdown didn't save any lives. And I can explain why. We actually have the data. Now, when I started writing the book last spring, I pretty quickly came to the conclusion that lockdowns don't work. And there was some evidence to support that. But between then and now, you know, 8 months later, and particularly in the last couple of weeks, there's a flood of evidence that reaches the same conclusion and documents it. And just to be concrete about that. So in the United States, we have 50 states. We never had a national lockdown. It was state by state, governor by governor, and they all varied. Places like California and New York had extreme lockdowns. I would say Florida was a moderate lockdown, somewhere in between. South Dakota never had a lockdown. The governor, you know, said, look, use common sense, wash your hands, wear a mask, social distancing, not so good, but we're not locking down the economy. So you had a spectrum of, you know, kind of degrees of lockdowns. Same thing around the world. Korea had an extreme lockdown. Sweden had what I would call moderate lockdown. Other countries, you know, Brazil did not do much in the way of lockdowns at all. So we have all different, you know, flavors of lockdowns. Well, now that we have the data, we can look at the caseloads, we can look at the fatalities, and the conclusion, and there are published studies on this. Again, one principal author is the professor of medicine at Stanford University. So these are not, you know, kind of people off the street. And what they show conclusively is that the lockdowns had no material impact on the caseload and the fatalities. In other words, you had the same experience with caseloads and fatalities, regardless of what type of lockdown or any lockdown that you pursue, which means that lockdowns have no effect on the virus. They do not stop the spread of the virus. Now, they're very good at destroying the economy. So it's not even like, oh, gee, we destroyed the economy, but we saved some lives. It's no, we destroyed the economy and we killed people with the lockdown, and we still are. So they don't work. But now, right now, today, as we speak, the virus is worse than it was last spring, meaning if you look at the caseload and the fatalities from, March, April, May of 2020, that was the worst of what, in hindsight, was the first wave. It was pretty bad. We all lived through it. Today, the caseload is almost 10 times greater than it was then. The fatality rate is almost double what it was then. So the pandemic is much worse today than it was last spring when it seemed pretty bad. And what are the governors doing? They're locking down again. So it's because they don't know what they're doing, but they're politicians. So they have to be seen to be doing something. They can't just sit there. So actually, sometimes doing very little is the right approach. So they want to do something. So they lock it down. They are destroying the economy and they're not accomplishing anything. If lockdowns work, why is the caseload 10 times greater? I mean, that by itself tells you that lockdowns don't work. But there is this other gap, I would say, between perception and reality. The reality is pretty bad. But the perception, you know, is that the stock markets are at new all-time highs, which they are. They recovered from the February-March collapse. They made up all the lost ground and they're at new all-time highs. So people go, well, stock market's at all-time highs. My 401k is back. So what's the problem? The problem is that the stock market has never been more detached from the real economy. So, okay, a lot of people use the S&P 500 as their benchmark, but you might as well call it the S&P 7 because there are seven stocks that are 40% of the cap weighting of the index. The S&P 500 is a cap weighted index, which means your market capitalization affects your impact on the index. So what are those seven stocks? Well, we know what they are. It's Amazon, Apple, Facebook, Google, Microsoft, Netflix, and Tesla. Those seven stocks are, as I say, 40% of the market. So they're going up, but they're also the least affected by the pandemic. They're digital, they're technological, they don't have a lot of bricks and mortar, some, but not a lot of the streaming entertainment services, you know, et cetera. So they're kind of going their way, you know, Amazon, everyone's shopping online, right? But what the other 493 stocks in the 500 are flat to down. You know, some individual stocks are up, but the rest of the index hasn't done anything. Okay, so that's the market perception. Now, what about the real economy? People look down their noses at, you know, small and medium-sized enterprises. They're like, oh, you're a restaurant, you have 20, you know, wait staff and bartenders. Yeah, who cares? It's only 20 people who have to lock you down. Well, I mean, I care, and certainly those people care. But what they're missing is that small and medium-sized businesses, so restaurants, bars, boutiques, nail salons, small shops, you know, gas stations, dry cleaners, et cetera, collectively, those are 50%, 50% of all the jobs in the economy, and 45% of the gross domestic product. So when these governors announce lockdowns, they're not locking down Costco and Walmart and Amazon and Tesla. They're locking down what I just described, which is small, medium-sized businesses, half the economy. You cannot lock down and effectively destroy half the economy without putting us back into a recession. That's my estimate, is that we're in a new recession right now. We had a recession, a severe one in the first half of 2020. There was a bounce back in the second half of 2020, did not come all the way back. It went down steeply, came back part way, but then leveled out. That's where we are. But now we're going into another recession because of the lockdowns that don't work, but the politicians just don't know any better. So this is the pandemic's bad enough, but we're destroying the economy for no good reason.
Yeah, and it's around the world too. It's global. Everybody is like this race to just destroy the economy. You think about it, like in Michigan, they said 35-45% of the small businesses have closed, will never reopen.
Correct.
You know, forget about the government checks, PPP, stimulus, they're not going to reopen. In New York City, man, you know, we spent our whole lives there, Jim, and the place is a hollowed out shell of its former self. People, there's a feeling of doom that I have never encountered in that city. Even during the fiscal crisis of the 70s, it was nothing like it is today. And then they're worried about whether or not you're wearing a mask. Now, we could debate the efficacy of masks. It appears that they really don't do any good in terms of the fact that every place that's imposed mask mandates has about the same infection rate as those that haven't. Now, maybe we're too dumb to be wearing sterile masks and properly fitting them, whatever the case. But honestly, just make everyone wear a mask if that's the price we have to pay to keep the economy open. But these governors, especially of blue states, and it's not just political, doesn't really break down on party. When you look at what they've done, they couldn't care less about these small businesses. They've just deliberately driven them into the ground. What is their game plan? What do they expect? If you're Gretchen von Braun Whitmer, what do you get out of this? Or Killer Cuomo, what do you get from this? How are they the beneficiaries? Is this just a power trip?
Don't just survive, thrive. The Financial Survival Network.
Goldterra Resource Corp is a gold exploration company that has assembled a highly prospective district-scale land position on the doorstep of the city of Yellowknife in Canada's Northwest Territories. Goldterra is currently focused on expanding and delineating gold resources at the company's Yellowknife City Gold Project with a goal of discovering over 5 million ounces. With ready access to infrastructure and multiple high-grade gold discoveries, Goldterra is on track to re-establishing Yellowknife as one of the premier gold mining districts in Canada. Goldterra trades as YGT in Toronto and YGTFF on the OTC. For more information, go to goldterracorp.com. That's goldterracorp.com.
This is the Financial Survival Network, the information you need to thrive now more than ever.
Well, to some extent, yes. I mean, there's more to it than that. But I say all these elected officials, not all of them, but a lot of them, they're sort of they have like kind of an inner fascist. But it can't come out, can't express themselves because it's too unpopular or too repugnant, or people will reject it, et cetera. But you know the old saying, Rahm Emanuel said in 2008, never let a good crisis go to waste. Once this crisis hit, all of a sudden they were empowered. It's like, oh well, public emergency, health emergency, I can do whatever I want. Well, that kind of emergency power is useful if you get it right, but they didn't. But it didn't stop them from doing what they're doing. So Gavin Newsom in California, Andrew Cuomo in New York, Gretchen Whitmer in Michigan, the governor of Maine, I think Governor Mills is her name, but yeah, they all, the inner dictator came out and they started giving orders. And I talk about this in my book in chapter two. You know, Governor Whitmer in Michigan issued an order saying, you know, essential businesses could stay open, non-essential could not, but you know, the definition of essential was highly subjective, but she banned all sales of carpets and paint. So Home Depot could be open, but you couldn't sell carpets and paint. Why? No one knows. I mean, it made no sense, but that was the order, you know. So if you live in Southern Michigan, you want some paint, just drive to Ohio. That's why lockdowns don't work. You know, New Jersey closed the gun stores. Okay, but you could drive to Pennsylvania. It's right across the Delaware River and go to a gun store. And then eventually New Jersey opened them. So it's not that a lockdown couldn't work if you had martial law and, you know, half the country, you gave them weapons and their job was to keep an eye on the other half of the country. Okay, that's a fully fascist, you know, dictatorship, if that's what you want. That's never going to fly in the United States of America. The fact is lockdowns don't work, but they don't stop the spread of the disease. They don't work in that sense, but they do destroy the economy. And that's what they've done. I don't have a, you know, I always tell people, don't waste your time trying to figure out crazy people, because it'll make you crazy. And I can look at what they're doing. I understand it. I can analyze it. I can write about it, which I did, but I can't exactly explain it because it makes no sense. But as again, I think the simplest explanation is they have to do something. They glom onto some popular notion. And by the way, the media aids and bets it, because if you, as I did in my book and others have done, Alex Berenson and others, if you come out and say, oh, lockdowns don't work, and by the way, here's the evidence, it's not just a claim. There's plenty of evidence to back it up. You'll be, you know, you'll be blocked on Twitter. You'll be deplatformed from YouTube. So it does, you can, stupidity is probably the best explanation, but it does make you wonder whether there's not some effort to basically destroy small business in favor of big business, destroy bricks and mortars in favor of digital, to empower the people who are behind it. I mean, that's what's happening. Whether it's by design or not, you know, we don't know yet, but I don't see how you can rule that out.
Hey, well, the book, it's must reading. I've got it here in the Kindle in front of me, The New Great Depression, Winners and Losers in a Post-Pandemic World. Jim, you know, when you compare this to the collapse, financial collapse in 08 and 09, that was really a nothing burger compared to this. And I always said afterwards that the next crash is going to far eclipse 08 and 09. But like you said, there are opportunities here. Caution is the byword. One thing we didn't talk about, and maybe have you on again, and we will, is the diaspora coming out of New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, Illinois, you know, all of these lockdown states. I'm here in Florida, and the state isn't just thriving. I mean, because the state's all about construction, new home construction, new businesses. They're just going at it like you cannot believe. They're the direct beneficiaries of this mass insanity of the lockdown governors. And now the lockdown governors are upset. Florida's doing too well, man. You need a mask mandate. You need to lock the place down so we can have a race to the bottom. I think when we get you on again, we're going to talk about that. In the meantime, give us some hope here. Tell us, just give us a couple things we can do right now to make our lives better.
Sure. And Kerry, you're absolutely right about the exodus. It's not just an observation. You see it, I see it, I hear it from a lot of sources, but there's hard data to back it up. You know, when you move, most people they go to the post office and file a change of address form because they want their mail forwarded. That is public information. And through the end of October, and I'm sure there's many more since, but just through the end of October in 2020, there were 300,000 such forms filed in New York. Now, that's per household, but if you assume three people per household, isn't that some larger, some smaller, but as a good average, that's almost a million people who have left New York. And the same thing in Los Angeles, San Francisco, Portland, Seattle, New York, Chicago, Philadelphia, Baltimore. They're all leaving. Now, where are they going? They're going to Miami, Austin. Nashville is the fastest growing major city in the United States, Phoenix, Scottsdale, Boise, Idaho. So if you just want to be involved in residential real estate through a fund, and you know, again, you got to look at the management and a lot of factors, but a residential real estate multifamily housing fund in those areas, not the places people are leaving. That's an exodus, but yeah, the places they're going. And again, I would say, you know, Miami, Nashville, Phoenix, Austin would be at the top of the list. There's good opportunity there. I always recommend gold, just 10%, not 50%, not 100%. You know, people want to put words in your mouth and say, Jim Rickard says, sell everything and buy gold. I've never said that. I don't believe it. I do recommend a 10% allocation. That's your inflation hedge, and that's your hedge against a lost confidence in the dollar. And if it does, as I expect, which I see it going to $10,000 to $15,000 an ounce over the next several years, that will, you know, to some extent insulate you from losses in other parts of the portfolio if they arise. Have some equities if you like, but I wouldn't recommend more than about 20%. I see people with, they're 100% in equities in their 401k, and they go, well, I'm diversified. I've got 30 different stocks in 10 different sectors. I've got semiconductors, consumer non-durables, you know, mining. And I say, no, you're not diversified. You may have 30 stocks, but you have one asset class. It's called equities, and they're hot. They're correlated. They go up together and down together. That is an extremely risky position. So have some equities if you like, but don't have that exclusively. I recommend 10-year treasury notes because interest rates are going to go a lot lower. Right now, they're going up a little bit. That'll probably continue, but that's going to hit a ceiling, slow the economy, which is probably going into a recession anyway because of the lockdown. They'll turn around, come back down, so you can have potential for large capital gains on 10-year treasury notes. And I recommend a slug of cash. And people go, well, cash has no yield. Yeah, I get it, but we could be looking at deflation. So the real value of cash actually goes up in deflation because your purchasing power goes up. But more importantly, it gives you optionality. Visibility is very poor right now. It'll get better over time. And so if you're the person with cash, when we can see more, you can pivot into, you might want to buy more gold, you might want to buy more equities, but you can do whatever you want if you have cash. But if you jump into something right now, it can be difficult or costly to get out. You know, you can invest in a private equity fund, but try getting your money back from Henry Kravis ahead of schedule. He's a nice guy, but he's not going to give you your money back. So cash is good for that. And also reduces overall volatility of your portfolio. So, you know, a slice of equities, 10-year treasury notes, a big slug of cash, maybe 30%, 10% allocation to gold. That's a good balanced portfolio. It has inflation and deflation protection, volatility projection, and a lot of upside.
Hey, and if you're looking for a new business, if you can figure out how to get all these U-Hauls from Texas, from Florida, from Nashville back to where they came from in some economic manner, whether it's flat bedding them or what, I don't know how you do it. I mean, every year in Florida, we have the flight of the snowbirds where they ship all their vehicles down to Florida by a flatbed. And you see the, you know, hundreds and hundreds of trucks coming and coming. And, you know, the, like you said, with the change of address forms, the U-Hauls, they're all winding up in the places they don't want them. So if you could figure out how to get them back economically, you could make a fortune. Well, again, the book is The New Great Depression, Winners and Losers in a Post-Pandemic World by James Rickards. If you find Jim's Twitter feed at James G. Rickards. And hey, write us an email. Let us know what you think. What are you doing to protect yourself? We'd love to know. Email us, kl@carrylutz.com. Go to the site, financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Sign up for the free newsletter. James, always a great pleasure and an honor to have you on. We'll talk to you again real soon.
Thanks, Carrie.
Thanks for listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, your solution to today's trying times. For the latest, go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.